On September 1st, all the borders were patrolled. No traffic was allowed out of the country. No foreign mail was allowed into the country. And with that, my friends, my mother and I were literally trapped in Hitler's hell. And this is the name of the book. Well, but still, though, we praise the Lord that we were not yet incarcerated. We thank the Lord that I was still going to school, although Hitler had closed the parochial schools and I had to go back to the state schools. It was tough, but I had a few nice teachers and some good friends. At least I got an education. But you see, that didn't last very long either. When I was 15 years old, my principal of my school came into my room and he said, "Dittmann, pack up all your things because I have something to give to you." Well, when I saw him, he handed me a notification from the Gestapo stating that due to my Jewish heritage, I was permanently suspended from school. And he added to it, he said, "It's high time that the German government is cleansing our school system of riffraff such as yourself." And about 2 or 3 months later, I was drafted into a very, very heavy forced labor, factory labor, or slave labor, as they called it, too. But the nice thing was I was able to work with my mother. We worked 10 hours a day, very, very hard work. And since I was always very athletic, the boss noticed it, so he let me carry 100-pound loads by myself. And one day, I've counted, I did that 24 times. Now, if you're good in math, you figure out how many pounds I carried. And then after we had finished work, we took the streetcar home, and then we went and stood in line for our food rations because we didn't have refrigeration, so we had to go there almost every day. But everybody, not only the Jews, stood in line. But no matter how hungry we were sometimes, no matter how tired we were, we just praised the Lord. We were yet relatively free. But even that was a very short duration. Because one morning, as we were getting ready to go to the factory again, it was at crack of dawn, the 7th of January, 1944, I'll never forget the date, we heard that familiar knock at the door, and my mother was looking around the ghetto at the apartment, wondering for whom it was today, and much to my dismay, when she opened the door, two SS men grabbed her by the collar of her coat, set her down in our room, and she had to fill out a form and also sign it that every item in our little room was her property. They put red labels on everything, and they informed me that now it was the property of the state, and that the next day the authorities would come and pack it all up, bring it to the warehouse of the headquarters of the Gestapo, and if I wanted anything back, I had to buy it back at greatly inflated prices. Well, I knew I couldn't do this. And of course, also, that they were going to take my mother away. Well, my friends, my mother had enough time to give me my father's phone number. My father had been divorced. My parents had been divorced a few years prior to it. And she said, "Call your dad. Maybe he'll be able to help you." And yes, he came the next day and helped me. He lived in a different city. I didn't know at first where they had taken my mother. But then when I found out that she was in Camp Theresienstadt in Czechoslovakia, something odd was happening. They were allowed to receive food packages. Well, I knew that on my poor income, I couldn't really afford to buy food on the black market, and my rations were just enough to keep me going. How could I possibly send her food package? So I went on my knees and I prayed to God. And what I'm telling you now, I'm not blowing my trumpet how good I am, but you know, in those days, and you young people who are here, listen carefully. In those days, we didn't take our parents for granted. And please learn not to ever take your parents for granted, because what you have and what you enjoy is only due to your parents, who make tremendous sacrifices on your account. And that's what I realized. For 16 years, my mother had made tremendous sacrifices on my account. Now it was time to reciprocate. But Lord, how was I going to do it? And I said, "Lord, I will be glad to be able to part with most of my food, but please keep me strong and keep me going so I can continue to do it. And he did that. And you know, we are just so blessed to be the children of a king who makes the impossible possible every single day, if we just look around. For 7 months, I worked very hard every day, and I ate no more but a piece of bread in the morning and a cup of what you call postum coffee made out of grain. Then I drank nothing but water during work, and at night I was lucky if I could have some, you know, watery soup of something, and everything else went into the packages. For 7 months I lived that way, and I was slender to begin with. Do you know, I had enough energy to give away. I was totally untouched by all the epidemics around me, and I showed no signs of malnutrition. Now you know, only a Lord like ours can make this possible. And an odd thing happened. I always sent the dark German rye bread in those packages, and the German rye bread is different from the bread over here. It's so solid you could almost sit on it without making a dent into it. And I would always send that, among other things. And my mother was allowed to send a little card, and in on the card, cleverly, she stated all the items she had received, so I knew nothing had been stolen out of the package by the Nazi guards. They liked to do that. But one day, it was exactly in July of that year, I had a strange notion to send my mother Zwieback, which is toast, and I couldn't figure out why was I doing it. I thought, has this starvation gone to my brains? What am I doing? Only to find out about 10 days later that my mother had written to me on her little card that she had been stricken with dysentery and couldn't eat the dark bread and had literally knelt by her cot and prayed to God to inspire me to send her Zwieback. I said, oh, what a hotline to heaven, my friends. And you know that hotline is still open to all of us. And I read the other day in my devotional, if you call on God and he puts you on hold, don't hang up. And he doesn't have an answering machine either. He answers himself. Well, she recovered finally, and about a month later, I got my notification one day when I came home. It was now the 9th of August of 1944. I was notified that I'm supposed to be standing in line the next morning, that I would be shipped off to an unknown destination, and with about 300 or 350 others like myself. We called ourselves mixed breeds. In fact, I always called myself a kosher kraut, since I'm mixed with a Jew and a kraut. You know, the Germans are the kraut. I'm a kosher kraut. I had very little time to think, but at least they didn't pick me up. And I said, Lord, what am I going to do with my mother? How am I going to let her know I can't provide her with food anymore? Please inspire me. And he did. I had enough time to go to a grocery store, pick up a loaf of the dark bread. It was a big loaf, had a red label on one end, and I trimmed the label off, stuck a knife in there, and then I rolled up a note and pushed the knife and the note in there. And I put the label back on again, and you couldn't tell that it was ever tampered with. And I asked a friend of mine, who was not going to camp, would she please send the bread off? And I wrapped the bread up, and I prayed over that loaf of bread. I said, Lord, please protect this loaf of bread that it doesn't fall into the hands of a Nazi guard. Because if they would have sliced the bread and found the note, they would have killed my mother. And 11 months later, I found out that for the very first time, that loaf of bread had arrived totally covered with a thick layer of fluffy green mold. Well, the Nazi guards were well fed. They didn't have to eat moldy bread. And my mother, in turn, was so starved that she scraped off all the mold, sliced the bread, and this is how she found the note. Isn't God wonderful? Think of it. That applause was not for me, but for the Lord. Well, my campsite housed about 150 women in a filthy old cow barn that had never been cleaned out, and it was just covered with a very thick layer of fresh straw, we were given about, well, one, yeah, two blankets, horse blankets, gray blankets, and we could lie anywhere where we wanted. Our toilet facility was an open ditch, probably the length of this one piece here, and they had to put a contraption over it where we could sit, no protection from the elements, nothing, no privacy. The washing facility for all of us was a cold water faucet on the outside of the barn. So the authorities gave us enamel basins, kind of like a dishpan, only round. And we had to share this with 9 other women. So 10 women used this, and we got some water in there. And then when we had washed our bodies and our whatever else, our clothes or dishes, we had to pass it on to the next person. They did the same thing. We were awakened at 4 o'clock in the morning, and the men, about as many as women, they lived in a horse stable not too far from us. There were a couple of married couples in the camp. However, they were not allowed to live with each other, but they could work with each other. We were awakened at 4. We were counted and recounted and insulted and humiliated. And then finally, they would give us a piece of bread and a cup of this postum coffee or whatever it was. And then we were loaded up with digging equipment, picks, shovels, and spades, and marched off. It was very warm. It was the warmest August that I can ever remember. We were allowed to wear tank tops or blouses and shorts and heavy boots. And then when we came to our place of work, they told us that we should be so proud to work for the Reich, you know, the country, and for the Führer. And we would be digging ditches. And the ditches were about, I would say, 7 feet deep, probably 10 feet, 15 feet wide, and I don't know how many kilometers long. We were not allowed to talk to each other. We dug ditches about, I would say, 8 to 10 hours in the burning sun. Nobody knew anything for protecting your skin. But those of us that were Christians, when the guard was coming, not looking, we would talk about Christ, and we soon knew who the Christians were. So after a long days of work, then finally after we marched home, we stood in line for our measly food rations. Usually we had little enamel pots and a spoon, and they would fill it with a liquid that we could never know what was swimming around in it. And sometimes you'd see a dead horse in the ditch when we were going home and saying, well, maybe we'll have some meat in the soup today. I was holding my little candle there, and I saw in a corner on a mattress a person sitting and sobbing. And as I got a little closer, not too close, I saw it was that very nurse that had so desperately tried to kill me. And you know, the Anita in me typically said, well, whatever happened to you serves you right, you know. But I could tell immediately I was not very pleasing to God. And at that moment, I saw him hanging on the cross, suffering not only for me, but for her sins too. And I remembered what our pastor told us about Matthew 5, 43 and 44. Love your enemies. And I knew that God wanted me to go out there. And I kind of argued with him. I said, well, don't you realize, Lord, what she's done to me? As if he didn't know that already. I said, okay, Lord, forgive me. I had to really humble myself first. And then, Lord, take the bitterness out of my heart and put your love into it. And he did that. And then, only then, was I able to witness to this nurse. I sat down beside her, I put my arms around her, and between sobs, she was leaning on my shoulder, she conveyed to me that she'd been raped many times. And I cried with her, because I realized what I had been spared. All of a sudden, she pushed herself away. She said, how could you possibly comfort me? Don't you realize I tried to kill you? I said, yes. But for Christ's sake and with his help, I'm able to forgive you. I've been here now for a long time, and unfortunately, as much as I love this country, but I have seen our society decaying greatly. And our Christian faith and we Christians, we're facing a tough road. And I think We all need to be on our knees every day and pray for our country and for those who govern our country.